purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:61, it is said, altogether, just testing you. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity, who is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exists on the mercy of the Lord, who is always with him in any form of body. The living entity desires a particular type of material enjoyment, and thus the Lord supplies him with a body, which is like a machine. Just to keep him alive in that body, the Lord remains with him as the Purusha, Shiradakshai Vishnu. This is also confirmed in Brahma Samhita 5:35. Eko pyasora chayetum jagadanda kotim, yachchakti rasti jagadanda chaya yadanta, andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam, govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the personality of Godhead Govinda, who enters the existence of every universe and every atom by one of his plenary portions, and thus manifests his infinite energy throughout the material creation. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Lord, is known as Jiva. The Supreme Lord, Purusha, remains with the Jiva to enable him to enjoy material facilities. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Omilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada's saving grace in the form of his purports, Ki Jai. It's not the verses that save us, it's the purports. It's actually the purports, because the purport is not only expanding the meaning of the verse, but it also is providing you with evidence, vital evidence to substantiate the verse. Now, if something is a verse in Shastra, why do you have to give substantive evidence? Well, for one thing, our minds, our worst enemies, that means that your own mind is worse than the worst Christian that you've ever met, the worst atheist that you've ever met, the worst psychiatrist that you've ever met. I was preaching to one boy in many, many years ago, and it just so happened that he was going through a spell of depression, as we all do occasionally. And I was invited to come to his home, so I came there with my other brahmachari friends. And yes, I was a brahmachari once. I was a teenage brahmachari. I've got the t-shirt. And may I say how splendid it is to see everybody in saffron. Hooray! Looks very nice. I didn't know where I was this morning when I came here. Was I at Bhaktivedanta Manor or was it Mayapur? So I was invited to come home, and there they brought the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist was a Bengali psychiatrist. Not only that, but he knew everything about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was a psychiatrist. Good combination? You bet. Except when he's a Bengali who knows the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who's a psychiatrist, and he's an atheist. And that gave me the run of my tiny little brahmachari life. Because I had to cope with a person who was an atheist, but who knew the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, in those days, I didn't know the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm not saying that I do now, but in those days, I knew it even less. Why? Because it hadn't been published. Prabhupada hadn't written it yet. We didn't know a great deal about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here was someone who came from the Holy Land, who was born in the tradition, but he was an atheist. And everything I said to him, well, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not necessarily. And I didn't know what to do with that at the time. You know, because he didn't seem rattled. He didn't seem phased. He didn't seem, doesn't really bother me. But it's not necessarily that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From where do you get your evidence? I said, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation of Krishna for this age of Kali? He said, not necessarily. And then he would follow that on with something in Bengali and something in Sanskrit, and I thought I was just beginning to melt like a piece of chocolate in hell. I didn't know what to do. And I think that over the years, it hasn't got any better, except that, well, for me, except I have a few more verses and quotes and a few more strategies. Because it is possible that when you listen to someone, you know exactly what they've read. Like last week, and that's why I couldn't be here for the wonderful saffron ceremony, I was on a spiritual retreat in Tuscany, Villa Vrindavan. This had been arranged by Paresh, who does mantra therapy, which is one of our many increasing, what you might call, gateways to Krishna consciousness, many access points. You know, Bhuta Bhavana has his launch pad, and someone else has mantra lounge, and someone else has mantra therapy, and there's a proliferation of, you know, there's this urban monk over here, and Atma Yoga over here, and everybody's got different access points. We need to give people access points. It's a good thing, because people need access. And, you know, Prabhupada was creating something quite different. Prabhupada was creating the organization that was going to give the world access. Prabhupada wasn't necessarily creating the universal access points to Krishna consciousness, although sometimes he was far more liberal even than we are. I think the expression is more Catholic than the Pope. So sometimes we find devotees these days that can be much more fanatic and fundamentalist than Prabhupada ever was. How is that possible? As followers of the Guru, how can we be more than the Guru is? You see, but the idea is that I'm going to fast more than Prabhupada. I'm going to follow a Kadashi stricter than Prabhupada. I'm going to, create a Krishna consciousness movement that's so strict that no one can ever join. Well, good luck. See how the founder Acharya of the movement that you're a member of, that you're privileged to be a member of, that you're a very junior member of, see how pleased he is if you create a movement that nobody else can join. So as Prabhupada was kind, we are kind. As Prabhupada was strict, we must be strict. But there's one thing that we can change. We can know more verses than the devotees back in the early 60s knew. We can know more verses. We can know more strategies. You see, we can be more intelligent. We can know more Sanskrit. There's no problem with that. But the more Sanskrit you know, the more compassionate you should become. That's the whole point. The better you think you're a devotee, the more kinder you should be, the more loving you should be, the more affectionate you should be. It's not that you become more strict and then become more critical. But the more engaging, the more you want to give unlimited access to people. Therefore, Prabhupada said some very strange things. That if we actually put these things into practice, we would think that it's very strange in our Krishna consciousness movement of today. For instance, Prabhupada said when they got the Los Angeles temple, that because it was an old church, he said, so half the pews you can take out, and you leave the other for people who are in the neighborhood who want to come and sit. And they can keep their shoes on and sit in one half of the temple. And then those of our devotees can sit in the other half without shoes. You can't do that. This is a temple. Take your shoes off or don't come in, buddy. Well, that's stricter than Prabhupada, but the result is that many people don't come in. When I went to ISKCON Dallas, I was very surprised. Because in Dallas, true to type, many of the men have cowboy boots. And I'm not going to ask any of you if you ever had cowboy boots, but they're pretty hard to get off. They're hard to get on. It's like skinny jeans, you know, hard to get on and hard to get off. Hard to put the boots on, hard to take them off. So what did they do? The solution was overshoes, surgical overshoes. So people put the surgical overshoes in and they came into the temple, had darshan after they went to the restaurant next door, and had darshan that they wouldn't have otherwise had with their shoes on. That's mercy. That's why when we have Rath Yatra every year, how many of you take your shoes off when you're having darshan of Jagannath in the street? Very few of you. How many of you would even dream of asking the average Japanese tourist to take their shoes off in Trafalgar Square? You wouldn't do it because this is the day when Jagannath is most merciful. Every temple has a day when the deity is most merciful. What's that place called? Vishakhapatnam? Nasinga, what's it called? Ahovalam. So I went there with Shivaram Swami back in 1986, and I took my shoes off. But on one day of the year, anybody can bathe the deity. Anybody. You see? Anybody. Whatever qualification they have. Just like Jagannath. They have people who are daitas, who are not very spiritually advanced, who are not very vegetarian, actually. We must say that they are not very vegetarian. In fact, some of them are not vegetarian at all. But on that one day of the year, or actually for 15 days of the year, they serve Lord Jagannath. Why? Because that's the way that Jagannath wants it. And even when Ramanujacharya said, oh, we've got to put a stop to this, this can't go on, this is not pukka ritual puja, he woke up in the morning and found himself many miles from Jagannath Puri. Jagannath didn't want it. This is the age when we need to reach out to people. This is the age when we need to give them excuses and reasons to join the Krishna consciousness movement. This is the age when we need to make it easy, otherwise people won't come. So making it easy for people to come doesn't mean that we lower our standards. Our standards go on increasing, but our mercy also goes on increasing. That's the point. And when we're bringing people into Krishna consciousness, we're very unstrict. But when we're practicing Krishna consciousness, we must be very strict. How strict? Very strict. Because being very strict will make you very merciful. And being very merciful will make you unstrict with others. Now, if someone comes to you and says, I think that you're not telling me everything. Is there something more I can learn? Is there something more I could be doing? That's the point when they ask, that's the point to give them. Now, something else has changed over the years is that people's focus on what they consider to be evidence has changed. I went on this spiritual retreat to Italy. We call them retreats, but it's just a sort of getaway weekend, long weekend. And I said to the devotee, I said, look, don't think I'm racist or anything, but is there any English people on this retreat? I don't mind, but, you know, Shruti Dharma told me that, you know, I'm the last, you know, I have to preserve the disappearing species, a bit like a panda. So I said, is there any English people that I could... He said, oh, yes, you know, all lots of young professionals. And then I rang him up the night before. I said, so just to ask you that same question, how many English people? He said, oh, no one. So it wasn't a problem for me, I hasten to add. Because when I did meet everybody, I discovered that although they had taken birth in Gujarati families, they were simply the same as anybody else that I would talk to. Not only that, but some of them were reading all the books that beginners, curious beginners to the spiritual path would read. Like these days, you know, Conversations with God and Eckhart Tolle and The Secret and all these different books that people read in order to, sort of begin. It's a popular books. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. Anybody ever tried to read that book? It's a smash hit bestseller. I managed about 10 pages. I did. I read it. I thought, how do you write a spiritual access book, a bridge book, so that thousands, hundreds of thousands of people all over the world read a spiritual book. I managed about 10 pages. It was too much. It was like, I don't know, it was like reading a telephone book. It was very boring. I couldn't do it. But that's the sort of book that people want to read, and that's the sort of book that all these young professional people read. So they were asking me, what do you think about The Secret? Do you think that's true? What do you think about this? Do you think that's true? What do you think about that? Do you think that's true? And I had to field questions based on, not Bhagavad Gita, but on the books that they had read. So in those books, we get a certain construct. You know what I'm talking about. If you preach to people these days, you know what I'm talking about. That their mind finds certain things reasonable and certain things unreasonable. And what you have to do is you can have to construct the famous Kripamoya ladder of ideas to help them walk up rung by rung. I say this now everywhere I go, because sometimes it's very, very hard, because we, in a space of one conversation, we give people one rung, you know, rung number one, and then we want them to jump up to rung number 13. And they can't do it because there's a lot of logical gaps in between. Systematic presentation of Krishna consciousness, or in Prabhupada's words, to systematically propagate Krishna consciousness, means we also give them a system of activities, but a system of ideas as well, that logically fit one after the other, one after the other. That's a system. It's not a system if there's a gap. Then it's unsystematic. If there's one idea missing that they can't take hold of, that's not systematic propagation of Krishna consciousness. But the interesting thing for us that's happening is that people have started to turn towards the Vedas more. Previously, many, many moons ago, I used to meet a Christian on the street, and I still do, of course. They seem to make a beeline for me, maybe because I can spot them in the crowd and I smile, and I still have hopes. I still have hopes that a person in Sattva Guna can come to Krishna consciousness. They used to say, you're a devotee of Krishna, but what would Jesus say about your devotion to Krishna? Let's have a look in the Bible, shall we? Let's have a look. Matthew chapter 13, text 4. Let's see what Jesus says about you coming to Krishna consciousness, shall we? Of course, at that point, I'd either go, well, yeah, okay, try me. Or occasionally, if it was John 3:16, which everybody knows, it's like they're 1866. You know, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that we should come. So I know that one. I said, yeah, I know that one. So, but now I find that what people are saying is that, first of all, I started saying to people, I said, okay, as long as you understand what God says in chapter 18, verse 66, okay? I know what God says in Matthew 13, verse 6. What does he say in 1866? Do you want to hear what God says? And he's the God of Israel. And they say, well, what do you mean Krishna is the God of Israel? I say, he's the God of Israel. And he's the God of India. And the entire planet. And the universe. And everything beyond. But if he's that, he's certainly the God of Israel. So you want to hear what the God of Israel says? He says, Sarva Dharman Puricharja. I had a friend who didn't even know 1866. So he would say, you know what Krishna says in 1866? You know what God says? Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivit. And that means abandon all other religions and surrender unto me. And of course, the person capitulated because they didn't know any better. Now, however, what happens is that I'm meeting Christians, and they're saying, give me one of those Bhagavad Gitas, because, one of my congregation does yoga, and I've tried to talk to them, but they say it's possible to combine Christianity and yoga, and they wanted to hire out the church for a yoga class, and at first I said no, but then I said yes, and I really don't know too much about it, but does this book tell me about yoga? Yes, it does. So now they're wanting to find out more. And what's happening in some places is that the congregation are going to their vicars and they're saying, that's in the Bible, but, you know, what do you have to say about the Bhagavad Gita? These are Christians speaking to their Christian vicar and saying, what do you have to say about the Bhagavad Gita, Reverend? Do you think it could be, do you think God could possibly reveal himself in other books apart from the Bible? And of course, being the Church of England, the Church of England vicar has to say yes, because of course that's the general rule. These days, with a culture of diversity, is that to reach out to the Muslim, to reach out to the Hindu, you first at least have to understand their book and appreciate that God may possibly speak to them in a different way. So now the Christians are reading the Quran, they're reading the Gita, in order to understand how the other people think so that they can witness to them. But in the process of doing that, they're coming across ideas which seem very similar to their own. So it's making them a little bit unstable. They don't quite know what to do with that, you see. But the other thing that's happening, unfortunately for us, and this is a really bad thing, is that people are reading books like Patanjali Muni's Yoga Sutras. And it's very bad for us, because it's making them very accomplished in Sanskrit verses. So it means that what we have to do is we have to learn Sanskrit verses. And we have to know what's in the Yoga Sutras. And we have to know what's in the Vedanta Sutra. Because these are known as prasthana trayi. These are the three things. Prasthana means the place where you start your journey. Like the prasthana for the London Marathon is Greenwich. That's the prasthana. The starting point for convincing anybody of the existence of God is the prasthana trayi, the three starting points, the Gita, the Upanishads, and the Vedanta Sutra. So they think that we know all these things. You see, it's not. You can speak to someone from SOAS, and you can talk about Bhagavad Gita, and they'll really appreciate the Bhagavad Gita that you know. But sometimes we come unstuck, because we move seamlessly from Bhagavad Gita to Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is classed as a sectarian Gaudiya book. It's a hagiography written only 450 years ago. So you can't say, there's certain things that you can say to a scholar and certain things that you can't. So within our own circles, Chaitanya Charitamrita rules. But outside our circles, it's either the prasthana trayi, which you have to be very specific. You can't say, you know, everything we do, why do you wear a kirtan, a dhoti? It's in the Vedas. Well, why do you shave your heads like that? It's just in the Vedas. And the Vedas, and you sort of gesticulate, meaning this huge, great reservoir of literature. You have to be able to, because someday someone's going to say to you, well, where is it in the Vedas? Show me. And you're going to be dealing with a scholar or a very intelligent university student that's going to call you up on it's all in the Vedas, and you're going to have to come up with chapter and verse. Now, some things that we do are in the Vedas. Some things that we believe are in the Vedas. Some things are in the Upanishads. Some things we believe are in the Vedanta Sutra. Some things are only in the Bhagavad Gita. And some things that we do are only in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Some things that we say and believe are only in the writings of the six Goswamis. Some things that we believe and do have only been contributed in the last 100 years. So we have to be able to sort it out in order that when we teach others, we can teach them, we can give them the right evidence. Now, if their evidence is, you know, The Secret or other popular literature, then you have to say, okay, is there any Upanishadic ideas that is being manifest in these books? Or is it a mixture of Upanishads and Buddhism? Okay, what's going on here? Let's strip it down to the bare essentials, and you'll find some bare essential ideas. And normally, everything is covered in Bhagavad Gita. But then Bhagavad Gita itself, Krishna is using, he's using references to Vedanta. He's using references to Upanishads. You see? That's why Gita is known as Gita Upanishad. So this verse is all about Paramatma. So Paramatma. Who says there's such a thing as Paramatma? And who says that it's Vishnu? I've had people say to me, actually the ultimate, in the Upanishads, as we know, the ultimate is Shiva. Because when you look in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, you find that the nomenclature for the Supreme is Shiva, or All Auspicious. So let's have a look at some of the evidences, which I just thought that I would compile. Could you hold on to that? I just thought I would compile this because I thought, let me try and give a class that they'll be impressed by. And here I am, and half the class has gone by already. Well, how do we know that Vishnu is supreme? There's a chain of logic here. Sometimes people say, scholars say, and if you don't speak to scholars, then I suggest that you do, because actually scholars are very, very influential, as well as their intelligent students. They're extremely influential. We don't have to preach to the destitute or the hopeless. Save that for the 1960s. We have to preach to extremely influential people. Why? Because they can influence more people. So, if it's all in the Vedas, then where is Vishnu in the Vedas? Well, here. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Paramam Padam means the supreme resting place. The Padam is the resting place. Paramam means the supreme. There's only one translation of that. It's in the Rig Veda. That's 1:22:20. Vishnu is supreme. That's the Paramam Padam. Only Vishnu gets this epithet that he lives in a Paramam Padam. All of the other celestials, they don't get this. So where does this concept of avatar come from? Well, I can tell you that the concept of avatar is a unique feature of Vaishnavism. Shiva does not have avatars, and none of the other denizens of heaven have avatars. How do we know that? Well, there's a corollary to the Rig Veda known as the Purusha Sukta. It is chanted at, you know, all different auspicious ceremonies, bathing the deities, fire yagyas, etc. Om. Ajayamano Bahudha Vijayate, Purusha Sukta. The one who is not born takes many births. The one who is not born takes many births. He is the Purusha. He is identified with Vishnu. Vishnu and Purusha are identified together. And if I thought carefully, I would have found another verse that links the word Purusha with the word Vishnu. Now, the reason I'm in this mode is because I've been reading over the past few weeks, a little bit every day, so we understand it, Baladev Vidyabhushana's commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And in there, it's all words and word endings and word definitions and referencing to words, because words can mean different things. You know, some person says that Krishna means all attractive. Well, why does Krishna mean all attractive? That's our rendition. Krishna actually means black. Krishna. Everybody knows that. Krishna means black. So he was black. So, our Gaudiya definitions elevate us by focusing in on our conceptions, but you can't always use, because that's, you have to use the what is known as the Mukhya Vidhi, you know, the direct meanings of something, that a scholar would say, yes, this is the direct meaning, rather than a meaning according to your sect. Then we find in the Rig Veda, Yuva Suvasa Parivita Agat Sa Ushayan Bhavati Jayamanaha. Rig Veda 3:8:4. And this is a beautiful one. Listen to this. He comes down. Comes down as Avatarana. Avatarana means coming down. He comes down decorated with beautiful garments. So he's a person. Surrounded by celestial beings. And becomes great by taking births. Rig Veda 3:8:4. Now, how do we know that that refers to Vishnu? See, because it doesn't say Vishnu in the verse. Well, within the Rig Veda, the most repeated story of someone who comes down is Vamanadev, Trivikram. You see. So then, on the philosophical portions of the Vedas, we find the next one. Pita putrena pitriman yoni yonau. Na Veda Vin Manute Tam Brihantam. Taittiriya Brahmana 3:12:55. God, who is the father of all, chooses his own children as his parents. Okay, this may get a little tedious because there's no stories or jokes in the next section. But this may help you one day in the future. Okay? So So God comes to earth and takes shelter of the womb of human beings in order to manifest his Leela. The Shatapatha Brahmana narrates the Matsya story, and the Taittiriya Aranyaka, the Kurma story, and the Taittiriya Brahmana, an episode of Varaha. Now all these, you know, it's easy for us to say, well, of course, it's all there in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam has not yet been critically analyzed by scholars. Not yet. You wait till they get going. You wait till you see. You think defending the temple so that the temple can stay open and defending the temple from politicians and the local government, you think that was a big fight? You know, I may not live to see it, but all you young people are going to live to see when scholars in Oxford and Cambridge are really having a go at the Srimad Bhagavatam, saying that it was written about 800 AD or 900 AD. Of course, now, because of the sterling work of some wonderful foresighted devotees, many, many of those scholars in Oxford and in other parts of the world where they study these things are likely to be such and such das. The postman brought me a wonderful book yesterday. It was the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, translated and commented on by Edwin Bryant, Professor Edwin Bryant. Have you heard of him? Huh? Disciple of Prabhupada. So this is now the foremost commentary and translation of commentaries on Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And I can tell you that in America, the yoga community love this book. It's a fantastic book. It really reads well. It reads as clear as a Prabhupada book because he is as clear in his head as a Prabhupada disciple. That's because he is a Prabhupada disciple. Perhaps he's, you know, I don't know what his name is. He left ISKCON maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago or something, you know, but Prabhupada is referenced throughout, and he fights for, although Patanjali only makes three indirect references to Vishnu, in this commentary, he comments upon other commentators who have said that Ishwara, because when he goes through all the different limbs of Ashtanga Yoga, and then he comes to a few sutras where he says that the perfection of samadhi can be attained by Ishwara Pranidhan. Ishwara Pranidhan means surrendering, absolute surrender to Ishwara. Now, Ishwara simply means controller, you see. But the concept of controller and the concept of Vishnu, we shall see, is supported by other Vedic language. So, are we okay? Are you all screamingly bored, or are we all, yeah? Look at me and smile occasionally. And you know. So, avatarana means coming down. The obvious questions, and these are raised by the acharyas. If the Lord is free from all perfections, why does he come here? What's the need? You only move from one place to another place if the grass is greener, if the grass is not perfect, if there's something in you that needs to be fulfilled. He's the Lord of the universe. Can anybody make him come to this world? If no one has made him come to this world, why would he come? He is omniscient. So what does he come here to learn? There's nothing that he can learn here. And he has no unfulfilled desires. So why does he come here? So then we examine these, and we go to the Shriya Shupanishad, and verse 8 we find. Let's see if I can remember. Saparigat chukra makayam avrinam ashnaviram shuddham apapa vidam. Something. Paribhus vayambur yata tatyato ritan vyadadach chashvata biasavabhyaha. And excuse me, I've forgotten that bit. So, he is akayam. He's unembodied. You see, this Upanishad is speaking about Vishnu. He's unembodied. He's avranam. He's without reproach. He's asnaviram. He doesn't have veins. He's shuddham. He's pure. Not only pure, but he'll purify you if you come close. He's antiseptic. And apapa vidam, uncontaminated. Cannot be contaminated, you see. Not only will he purify you, but you cannot dirty him. You cannot dirty him. So he's Sarveshwara. No one can make him do anything. Sarvagya. He doesn't have to learn anything. He's avapta samasta kama. All his desires are already fulfilled. In fact, in Mantra 8, Ishupanishad, it says, yata tatyato ratan vyadadach. Artan means what everybody desires. Not only does he desire nothing, but he's fulfilling all your desires. For how long does he fulfill your desires? Shashvatabhya, samabhya, since time immemorial. So why does he come? Why does he come? Now this links in, because in the Pancharatra Samhita, we follow two books, you see. You know when you go on the altar, who's Brahmin initiated here? Put your hand up and give me a wave. With the thumb that you use to chant your Gayatri on. Give me a wave with your thumb. Okay, there you go. So when you go on the altar, we have verses that we chant, and they are from the Haribhaktivilas, and that's all we know. That's 500 years ago, but those verses come from, many of them, Pancharatra Samhita, which is as old as the Vedas. It's a corollary. And these verses teach us how to worship Vishnu. So in the Pancharatra Samhita and the commentary, the Ahir Buddha Samhita, we find... I'm skipping a bit now. We find that he makes his avatar, his expansion, in five forms, or God is located in five ways. And that is in his highest abode, in his lila form, in the deity, in the chaturvyuha, and also in antaryami, in the paramatma. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti comments, he says, well, if we turn to Bhagavad Gita, we find that Krishna appears in these different ways. He says, I'll skip that bit. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to Bhagavad Gita, the Ajopi Sanavyayatma verse, he says that, unlike us who are covered by Prakriti, the Lord manifests his own true form. And then he quotes Chandogya Upanishad. You see? He quotes Chandogya Upanishad. Sa Bhagava Kasmin Pratishta Sva Mahimni. In what is the Supreme situated? It is situated in its own glory. Chandogya Upanishad 7:24:1. So it means when God makes an appearance in your heart as Paramatma, as the indwelling Supersoul, he's situated in his own glory. You can say, oh, the Lord is inside my heart. No, he's inside the spiritual world. He's manifested that spiritual world inside your heart. Why does he come? Krishna says, I come when there's dharmasya glani and abhyutanama dharmasya. I manifest myself. So Paramatma is also an avatar of the Lord who manifests within the material world specifically for that purpose, to destroy ignorance. Ramanujacharya says that, okay, of these two functions, protecting the devotees and destroying the non-devotees, the former, protecting the devotees, is more important than the latter. He asks the question, why? He says, because destruction of evil forces can be done by his sankalpa, by his will. He can just give everybody, all the demons, heart attacks. If Krishna wanted, every single demon on the Battle of Kurukshetra could have a heart attack. They all fall over. There was no need for Arjuna's arrows or Bhishma. You know, there wasn't any need for so much bloodshed immediately, because he's Paramatma. He can do it. He's right there. He just has to twitch his little finger and someone will immediately have a heart attack. He's located in a very good place for it. So why doesn't he just do that? So Ramanujacharya says, because he's come for the other purpose, protection of the devotees must be done by an appearance before the devotees. Therefore, Ramanuja says, Saru Paritrana is thus the main purpose of an avatar. And he says, the appearance before the eyes of a devotee promotes devotion by the direct perception of the object of his meditation. Aradya Swarup Pradarshana. That's when a devotee sees the object of his meditation. And of course, we find within the Bhagavatam, Dhruva Maharaj was visited by Prishnagarbha, the object of his chanting mantras, and Prahlad was also visited by the Lord. They had direct darshan. Sometimes the Lord doesn't give his darshan. He comes as a sari to Draupadi, but he comes as his own revealed form to Gajendra. Sometimes he doesn't do that, but for the devotee. So this idea of super soul, is it anywhere else? Or is it just in Bhagavad Gita that you people believe in? Well, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, we find that there's a long conversation between Udalaka and Yajnavalkya. Who's Yajnavalkya? Yajnavalkya. We chant the words of Yajnavalkya every Friday and every Saturday. Here, right in this temple, right here in this spot. Om Mahato Putra Bhavan Bhavan Apicha Mahaniyam Kanya Samarpita Tasya Dosha Shantavya Gunascha Prasamsaniya. Yajnavalkya just happens to be the one who writes the wedding ceremony. You might be interested to know. Or not. So we chant these prayers here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, not even knowing where they come from, not even knowing that Yajnavalkya is the person who speaks within the Brihad Anyaraka Upanishad. And there's a long conversation in which he repeats, that person who is within the earth, but whom the earth does not know. That is the Supreme. That person who is within the tree, but who the tree does not know. That is the Supreme Spirit. That person who is within the mountain, but the mountain does not know. That is the Supreme Spirit. So he goes, it's a long, 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 long list. And at the end he says, the Supreme Being who is immanent in all sentient and non-sentient beings in the universe and who controls everything from within. This is the key phrase, that the Supreme is not just out there, but he's also in here. Now the difficulty for us is that Prabhupada has given us all these ideas. So you're looking at me and say, yeah, so? Well, I know that. Why do you have to say that in a Bhagavatam class? See, it's time for another story. But for preaching, we may have to be able to convince people who only listen. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was once challenged by the Babajis of Radhakund, who hated him with a vengeance because he had introduced, amongst other things, saffron kirtas and bead bags and, you know, Brahmin threads for non-Brahmins and different mantras to be chanted along with the Gayatri mantra. And it brought in all these things. And people said, you can't do that. You can't make it up as you go along. You have to be a traditional Vaishnava. We're in the line of, you know, Gopal Guru Goswami or Janachand Goswami. We're in these lines. And therefore, we're more bona fide than you. So stop your nonsense, you know. Stop your nonsense and start living like us. We challenge you. And then he said, all right, I'm coming. We can have a debate in public. They said, well, we can have a debate in public, but you can't use the Bhagavatam. You can only use, I forget what it was, but ultimately they sent him several messages. You can only use the Upanishads to defend what it is that you're doing with the Gaudiya Math. He said, fine. I'll just by using the Upanishads, I will establish my form of Krishna consciousness. So they said, oh, sorry, we're sick. We can't come that day. Okay. I'm not going to keep you much longer because I can see you've got itchy feet and you have to go. Svetashvatara Upanishad says, here's a great one. Gya gyo dwa ajo ishan isho. It's very nice. Let's say it together. Gya gyo dwa ajo ishan isho. There are two. The one omniscient and the other ignorant. Both unborn. One is a ruler and the other is not. So Balabhadeva Vijayabhushana, in his commentary to Vedanta Sutra, he explains this a similar verse in the Chandogya Upanishad. Chandogya Upanishad gives a very nice depiction of a forest. It says, because they speak poetically, this is a forest, unlimited forest, and in that forest there is a cave. And in the cave, there is an unlimited sky. Baladev Vijayabhushana says, what does this mean? He says, if the forest is the body and the cave is the heart, then inside, what is it? There's an unlimited sky. What does he mean? The Taittiriya Upanishad refers to the heart as the abode of the Supreme Lord. See, it's a correlation between the Upanishads and gives a description of the Paramatma. Very, very important. Taittiriya Upanishad, which you don't normally get this from, as having the complexion of dark blue. Okay? Extremely important. The words are Nila Mega. Nila Mega. Nila means blue. Mega means cloud. Dark blue cloud. With a luster like lightning, which is very subtle. Tasya, and here's the verse. Taittiriya Upanishad 101. Tasya Shikaya Madhye Paramatma Vyavastita Nila To Yadamadhyasta Vidyul Le Keva Bhasvara. Then, a few verses later, 128, same book, says that the Lord, this beautiful Lord, who has a luster of lightning, who's dark blue, says that the Lord is the size of the thumb. Lord is the size of the thumb within the heart. Angustamatra Purusho. Angustamatra Purusho. Angustam cha samashritaha. So then Baladev Vijayabhushana in the Govinda Bhasya, he says, well, what size is the thumb? If Paramatma is inside an elephant, what size is Paramatma inside the elephant? So then he comes to the conclusion after a few verses that Paramatma is the size of the thumb of the creature in whom he inhabits. He says, if you have a mosquito, what size is the Paramatma? Okay? That means most of the Paramatma is actually in outside the mosquito, which would then make part of Shastra irrelevant or untrue. Because if he's antaryami, it means he's within the heart of the living entity. So Baladev Vijayabhushana, conveniently, 400 years ago, he answers that question for us. Because that, I knew you were going to ask that. So then we come to Patanjali Muni, who was writing, the scholars say, at least 4,000 years ago. That's what they say, at least 4,000 years ago, which is a long time ago. And the reason we should read the Yoga Sutras is, one, it's brilliant. Second, it doesn't contradict anything. Third, it'll really help you to understand the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is only a real, real summarized, you know, well, if you were on the battlefield and your ultimate thing was to tell your disciple to engage in bhakti, would you bother speaking about yoga for a very long time? No. So Krishna doesn't. Similarly, Krishna doesn't talk much about puja to Arjuna. It's only when he's with Uddhava later on, then he really gets into puja and how to actually worship him. So Patanjali Muni, in his Yoga Sutras, as I said, Ishvara Pranidhanat, he says, from submission to God comes the perfection of samadhi. Who is Ishvara? Could it be Shiva? No, because by the time that Patanjali Muni was writing, Vishnu was established as the Lord within the heart, the antaryami. Of course, the conclusive proof of Paramatma alongside the Atma is the verses that Krishna himself refers to, the Katha Upanishad and the Kena Upanishad, which talks of the two birds in the tree. Katha Upanishad 1:20. Let me see. Very nice. So then Krishna says, then we go on to Krishna. And this must have come as a bit of a surprise. I'll be just 5 minutes, okay? Is that all right? This must have come as a great surprise to Arjuna, because no sooner had Arjuna said, I surrender to you, you're my guru, than just a few minutes later, you know, a few minutes, in the beginning of the fourth chapter, Krishna says, well, actually, what I'm telling you now, I told the sun god many years ago. So I don't know about you, but if you'd only just got initiated, okay, and then your ISKCON guru turns around to you like, you know, a few weeks later and says, by the way, me and the sun god are good friends. Did you know that the sun god is actually my disciple also? You'd look at him and you go, hi, Guru Maharaj, Hare Krishna, hello. I think my... My guru is has a little bit of a problem. So here is Krishna, and just a few minutes into the discussion, he's actually telling Arjuna. So how does this work, that Krishna can actually tell Arjuna that he's God, even before he's shown him the universal form? It's because when Krishna tells you something, he immediately also speaks to you from within the heart. In fact, inside and outside correlate. And from illuminated from within the heart, you get the understanding at the same time as you get the words. Now, sometimes that doesn't happen, and sometimes it really happens. You're reading a book, and you really get the understanding at the same time as you read the words. That means outside and inside is, you know, so you're doing well. So then in 13.3 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, where he's talking about various things, he says, Kshetra gyam chapi mam vidhi. You should understand that I'm also the knower in all bodies. I am the knower, but in all bodies. Okay, who is that person? He is tadejati, tannayajati, tadure, tadvantike, tarantarasya sarvasya, taru sarvasyasya bhayata. He's the person who walks, but he doesn't walk. Anejare kang manasojaviyo, naina daivam apnuvan purvam marashat, taddavato jnana tieti tishtat tasmin, apo matrishvadadati. Matrishvadadati means I'm the one who's in charge of all the rain-giving devas. That's me. I'm inside everything, I'm outside everything. So Ishvapanishad, we find this concept of God within and God without. He's so far away, tadure tadvantike. He's so far, far away, but he's so close to you. He's so close to you that he's inside you. What a wonderful thing. See? Therefore, when you ask a Christian, where is heaven? And he goes, heaven is up. Jesus ascended into heaven. He went up. But when you ask a person who knows Bhagavad Gita, where is God, where is heaven? They go, right there. Right there. It's within me. Okay. And where did Jesus say heaven was? The kingdom of God is within you. The kingdom of God is within you. Then the Lord says, the Lord God of Israel. Okay? The Lord God of Israel says, Upadrishtanumantacha Bharata Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatmeti Chapyukto. Lord God of Israel, meaning Krishna. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter. Upadrishta means the overseer. Upa, over, drishta, can see everything. And Anumanta gives permission for everything to go on and is known as the Paramatma. And this is a very good verse to know. 13.23, Paramatmeti Chapyukto. Paramatmeti. This is where Krishna himself identifies himself and uses the term Paramatma. Now, Prabhupada has translated that as super soul. Please don't use that term unless you've previously qualified that with someone, because I hear a lot of devotees speak this jargon, and people don't have a clue what you're talking about if you say super soul. It's only us that talk like this. Did you know that? When you say soul, the word soul to a person, that word soul means the Greek, Roman, Christian understanding of the soul. It's a subjective portion of the complete self. It's the part that goes to heaven. You see? When we say soul, we mean that's the part who you are. It's the soul is the person who owns the body. But when you use the word soul to a Christian, you're talking about you're the body that owns the soul. So we're not talking the same language right there. So if we want to get specific, we can say jiva, the life force, or atma, the self. But paramatma, or super soul, they think you're talking about a type of 1960s music from Chicago. You know, Motown record, super soul. The point is here that super soul doesn't mean anything to anybody. It's like when you say false ego. That doesn't mean anything to anybody. It's ISKCON jargon that was given to us. You can use the word ego, and then you can explain to them that ego is not actually the real self. but you have to do some explaining before you say false ego. So then finally, and this is my last couple of verses here, Krishna clinches it in 15:15 by saying, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishta. Sannivishta means situated, and sarvasya means all. Chaham means I, and hridi in the heart. So all of myself in the heart am situated. I'm situated. All of me is situated in the heart. And then he says, Matasmritir jnanam apohanam. From me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Then finally, 1861, Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara sarvabhutanam. And that Ishvara, which Krishna has already said is me, which we've already heard is Vishnu, that's the one who's situated in everyone's heart. And Prabhupada said, the machine made of material energy. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, I am situated in the heart, and I'm pulling the strings of the doll, which is your body. I'm the puppet master of your body. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So, my dear friends, I hope that in this very brief presentation, I have convinced you, A, of the need to meet argument with argument, B, to move away from the catch-all phrase, it's all in the Vedas, to be a little more specific, because people in the world are becoming much more specific. I hope I have encouraged you to read Patanjali Muni's Yoga Sutras, as well as to cross-reference the Upanishads, and to have evidences, compiled evidences, for every single thing that we do in Krishna consciousness. Because unless you do, that's the one thing that may be the cause of your doubt in the future years. Whatever it is, it's waiting for you. Your middle-aged angst is waiting for you. And it'll be the bit that you haven't researched, because that's Maya's found your weak spot. Maya will find your weak spot and will test you. So, Paramatma, Atma, two birds in the tree. We must give up the tendency to enjoy, and we must enjoy with Paramatma. How? By performing service. And then Krishna finishes off. What do we do to the Paramatma? Well, we surrender utterly. Sarva dharman prityaja mam ekam. Just surrender to me, to that person. And then you'll be free from all fear, free from all problem, and you'll be all very, very happy. And this is this Krishna consciousness movement. And we practice this, follow Srila Prabhupada, very easily. At the end of this life, we can go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.